Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the post-DPW convention Monday edition. We got a fine Dem joining us a little bit later in the hour. Attorney General Josh Call joins today at 4:30 live via Zoom. Abortion is now illegal in the state of Wisconsin, and I've heard the governor and I heard the attorney general, and they said, we're going to do everything we can do. And that means very, very little. And it's not because they don't have the want. They just don't have the means to do much about it. And here in the state of Wisconsin, the legislature has been gerrymandered to the point where there will be no legislative will to solve this 173-year-old anti-abortion law that now is the law of the land in the state where I live. You can't get it done through the legislature. You got damn near two-thirds Republican majorities, regardless of the votes of the people. Republicans win larger and larger majorities because that's the way the maps are set up to bake the cake for their ongoing, forever, perpetual electoral advantage. Now, I take some issue with that, but that is the facts on the ground. The only way you're going to change this or solve this problem is with a congressional, a federal level legislative majority, and you need a couple more seats, you know, over on the Senate side for sure-sies, because you got to overcome the filibuster. You need like 52. You got to go overcome the Manchin and the Sinema filibuster. We'll perhaps talk a little more about the disaster looming thanks to Joe Manchin. But I want to turn my attention to the J6 hearing number 6, unexpectedly scheduled for tomorrow at high noon. We're going to play him live. But here are the early comments about the importance of this. The headline here at the Raw Story, one of my favorite sources. This is big. Former Senator, in this case, Claire McCaskill, explains why the J6 committee might have scheduled a last-minute hearing. The House Select Committee investigating the January 6 attack on the U.S. Congress revealed that they're holding an unexpected hearing tomorrow, 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 o'clock Central. According to former Senator Claire McCaskill, Dem from Missouri, this ain't normal, and it likely means there's something significant happening. Please let her be right. Please let her be right. Here's the quote. They've done a very good job exceeding expectations, so I don't think they'll want to upset that track record. She began speaking to MSNBC's Nicole Wallace on Monday. So you have to assume this is big, because I will tell you one thing I know for sure, having spent a lot of time in D.C., members of Congress don't show up 3 days before the 4th of July weekend for just anything. McCaskill went on to explain that there are only a few reasons that a committee would rush to get someone to testify the way that they are. This is either a witness that for some, because of a frailty, an illness, maybe perhaps they're not sure of their ability to appear later, or probably much more likely that Mike Schmidt just said, they're saying they'll do it now, but they're reluctant. So there is an effort to make sure they capture the live testimony while the iron is hot, while the witness says they will do it, because they've had a lot of witnesses who have refused to give live testimony. I'm hoping it's videotape of the Trump kids, you know, hot off the presses. That's what I'm hoping for. Again, Claire McCaskill being quoted here, though, apparently, you know, U.S. Senator makes you more important than Crudy. So I think that's probably what it is. Now, this is the one time as a prosecutor, I'm jealous of the committee members, because obviously You cannot put a witness on the other side that the other side doesn't know about in a real trial. Surprise witnesses are only in rebuttal. And then the other side has to have opened the door. So I think this will pique interest with all of us. And I don't think they would be piquing interest if they didn't think they could deliver something. Oh, they better be delivering. Bring home the bacon, J6 committee. That's what I'm saying. And, you know, which brings us back to a thought about U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. Now, Rojo was featured in the J6, the live committee testimony the other day, was he not?
No, he wasn't.
Something about
but he was.
Handing off some electors to the vice president. I wanted to do so personally. Didn't you hear something about that, Fancy Brian?
Yeah, he wanted to.
I'm sorry, man. Someone's got to turn on the mics.
Yeah, he was there, but then he wasn't there, but then he was there, but then he wasn't there. But it was real, but it wasn't real. It happened, but it didn't happen. It was only 2 minutes. A lot of things can happen in 2 minutes. Like, you know.
I conceived a couple of my kids in 2 minutes or less. I feel pretty confident. You know, there's an interesting story over at CNN today. The headline here, this Republican senator keeps changing his story on the fake elector scheme. I think they mean Rojo. Chris Saliza, CNN editor-at-large, reporting. Ron Johnson just can't get his story straight. Last week, in a hearing of the J6 committee, we learned that Johnson's chief of staff had attempted to coordinate the handoff of a slate of fake electors from Michigan and Wisconsin to Vice President Mike Pence. Now, Pence's head of legislative affairs put the kibosh on the move before it ever happened. Said, no, thank you. Don't deliver to the vice president these fraudulent fake Trump electors. So anyways, Saliza writes on. Asked about his involvement, Johnson, a Republican senator from Wisconsin, said that he knew nothing about it.
Yeah, I was not involved in this at all.
Because it's important. Here's the full exchange on Tuesday afternoon between Johnson, CNN's Manu Raju, and other reporters. These things were delivered to our office. I didn't know they were coming. I had no hand in it. My staff, my chief of staff, did the right thing. He called up the vice president. No, is that the right thing, Ron? This letter that you have delivered from somebody and you don't know who, but it comes and it's addressed to the VP, and you think the right thing to do is to hand it off to the VP, because, of course, that is your proposed action. You texted, right? He didn't want it. We didn't send it to him. End of story. Big nothing burger, right, Fancy? Manu Raju, why did you just deliver that to the vice president without vetting it or asking more questions about it? Yes, that's a fine question, Manu. I had, you know, similar questions. But you got to be careful. Curiosity kills the cat, right? Johnson, I didn't deliver it. We called them up. He didn't want it. We didn't deliver it. End of story. That's his second end of story in this story. But why did you even offer it without vetting it? Raju asked. Now, Rojo's response. Well, we got handed an envelope that was supposed to go to the vice president. I didn't know, so we called. We called up the vice president. He didn't want it. We didn't deliver it. It's a non-story. Guys, this is such a non-story. So two end of stories and now two non-stories. Was that the first you had heard of it when you received the envelope? Yeah. And who, do you remember? Who gave it to you? No, it was a staff-to-staff deal. I mean, it apparently had Michigan and Wisconsin. I had no hand in any of it. Again, this lasted a couple minutes in our office. Then the episode was over. And this, guys, is a total non-story. So we've got two end-of-stories, two non-stories, and a total non-story. One conversation. Raju, are you going to ask your aides about who this person was? Have you asked? We didn't know. Literally don't. It was staff to staff. Somebody from the house, some staff intern, you know, and said, we got it, and the vice president needs this or whatever. I wasn't involved. I don't know what they said. But somebody from the three butts. You know Ron's about to lie when he lays out three consecutive butts. But somebody from the house delivered it to a staff member in my office my chief of staff called the vice president. Hey, we got this. And the vice president said, don't deliver it. And we didn't. You know, the one thing conspicuous by its absence. End of story. He didn't say it in this paragraph.
The story goes on.
Raju, are you curious about the identity of this person? Do you want to ask about it? Johnson, no, because there's no conspiracy here. This is a complete non-story, guys. Complete non-story. We're up to, what, 3, 4, 5 non-stories and a total non-story and 2 end of stories. So we're up to 8 end of story sort of denials.
And he's calling people guys. That's how he brought you guys in. Hey, guys, boys.
So at this point, Saliza jumps back in. So according to Johnson, a staff intern from the House somehow got a hold of a fake slate of electors from 2 key swing states and was trying to pass them to the vice president of the United States. Johnson, in this retelling, was wholly uninvolved. Except, well, Johnson's story started to change as the week went on. By Thursday, Johnson said the fake elector slates had come from the office of Pennsylvania Rep. Mike Kelly. And Johnson also acknowledged in an interview with a local radio station, Righty Whitey Icky Vicky, right, that he had coordinated via text message with his chief of staff and Dane County Attorney Jim Troupas to make sure Pence got Wisconsin's fake elector slate. But wait, there's more. Kelly's office told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel the congressman had not spoken to Ron Johnson for the better part of a decade and has no knowledge of the claims Mr. Johnson is making related to the 2020 election. And hence the, as Chris Alyssa describes it, the Grand Canyon-sized gap between Johnson's initial explanation and his second story. And the story, I think it's continued to evolve. So I'm going to need a second segment just to get all the moving parts in. Ron Johnson, you know, keep your story straight. If you're going to commit, you know, let's just say, attempted traitorous, treasonous insurrection against the United States, if you're going to, you know, co-conspirator in a plot, a coup plot, you better have your alibi. You know what I mean? You better have it worked out before you start telling Manu Raju or even Icky Vicky. More Devil's Advocates. We'll be right back.
This is a big one. I'm dying. You hear that, Elizabeth? I'm coming to join you, honey.
Yeah, I was not involved in this at all.
You big dummy.
Why don't you just leave me alone?
And you're so busy feeling good that you never question why things are going so well.
When they go low, we get high.
You want
the Devil's
why?
Advocates.
Cause I'm a liar. Yeah, I'm a liar.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show. I tell you no lies. We are returning from the 420 break, returning to talk a little more about the strange and ever-changing case of Ron Johnson. Criminal co-conspirator or just dumb guy? Either way, it doesn't look good.
Can it be both?
Probably. 4 days ago, Rojo on his Twitter account, you know, sort of self-defending, deflecting, if you will, the J6 committee's partisan witch hunt is revealed. They smeared me with partial and incomplete information. This sets the record straight, as I have been saying. This is a non-story driven by corporate media that is complicit in the spreading of the dims lies. Non-story. Nothing to see here. Move along, right? He continues to say that. Now back to Saliza. I'm going to be a little redundant, but, you know, I like how he phrases it. There's a Grand Canyon-sized gap between Johnson's initial explanation, a House staff intern sent something to his office, and his chief of staff tried to pass it along to Pence. And his second story, the false slate, came from Kelly's office. And then he was on an email chain coordinating a way to get the documents in front of Pence. So which is it, Chris Alyssa asked? Well, perhaps it's the further evolution of the story. Because there's new news on this topic. Johnson now says he coordinated the effort to hand off the false elected. Right? This, according to...
I was not involved in this at all.
Except I was, completely.
This, according to Molly Beck at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, the paper of record locally, Ron Johnson now says he helped coordinate effort to pass false elector slates to Pence, but his new explanation drew a sharp and quick rebuke. Let me read a little bit of this for your listening pleasure. After initially claiming to be basically unaware of an effort by his staff to get fake presidential elector documents to VP Pence, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson said Thursday he coordinated with a Wisconsin attorney to pass along such information and alleged a Pennsylvania congressman brought slates of fake electors to his office, a claim that was immediately disputed. The, you know, Pennsylvania congressman part. Evidence presented this week by the U.S. House Committee investigating the J6 attack on the U.S. Capitol showed Johnson's chief of staff tried to deliver the two states' list of fake, fraudulent, corrupted presidential electors for former President Donald Trump to Pence on the morning of the U.S. Capitol insurrection, but was rebuffed by Pence's aide. Now, we've talked about the fact Johnson initially told reporters last week he didn't know where the documents came from and that his staff sought to forward it to Pence.
You know, I was not involved in this at all.
And then he said on Thursday with WIBA AM, again, Icky Vicky, that he had since discovered the documents came from Pennsylvania U.S. Rep. Mike Kelly and acknowledged he coordinated with Dane County attorney, Trump attorney, Jim Troupas, and his chief of staff by text message that morning to get Pence a document Troupas described as regarding Wisconsin's electors. You know, the fake, fraudulent, corrupted criminal electors.
Oh, that's Kelly's, what you were talking about. Oh.
Kelly's office immediately pushed back on Johnson's claim, saying Senator Johnson's statements about Representative Kelly are patently false. Mr. Kelly has not spoken to Johnson for the better part of a decade and has no knowledge of the claims Mr. Johnson is making related to the 2020 election. On Thursday, Johnson said Troupas contacted him by text message on the morning of January 6, 2021 to get a document of Wisconsin electors to Pence. But didn't our pal Rojo get, you know, sort of confronted, if you will, at the General Mitchell International Airport? And if I understood some of that confrontation, Rojo said, well, you know, I was only involved for 2 minutes. Well, those are the criminal 2 minutes, though.
Yeah, and 2 minutes can change your life.
It only takes a couple minutes to rob a bank, right? The 2 minutes, those are the important 2 minutes. The one where you're saying, you know, give me all your money, or in this case, hey, VP Pence, do you want these fraudulent, corrupted, fake Trump electors that I'm more than willing to hand off unvetted to you? And then I'm going to go lie to the press about it, tell them it's a non-story 5, 6, 7 times. But really, as the truth continues to come out, it is a story. Because it's a story of, you know, co-conspirator corruption, insurrectionist action, breaking of a constitutional oath by a U.S. senator. I'd put him down for that one. Or this man is so moronic, which is also a possibility. He just doesn't freaking know what's reality, what's happening in his life, where these papers came from, who's my chief of staff, what day is it. I'm old. I'm confused. But he's also out there going after DHS today, Mayorkas. You know, there's a leak out there. I forget the specifics of what it is that Ron's accusing others of leaking about. But, you know, Ron's got sort of a history and might be trying to, you know, sort of change the conversation. A little bit of coverage on the confrontation at General Mitchell International Airport. That happened late Friday after a self-described progressive political strategist confronted Rojo about his effort to give Vice President Mike Pence false elector paperwork. Lauren Windsor, a liberal activist known for her hidden camera exposés targeting Republicans, began videotaping Johnson after he got off his plane from D.C. She asked the Oshkosh Republican to respond to his statements from Thursday in which Johnson claimed the false elector paperwork came from U.S. Rep. Mike Kelly. You know, the allegation that Kelly's office said, hell no. First of all, we all see what actually transpired, Johnson told Windsor, referring to Kelly's rebuke. Obviously, we believe it came from his office. I never spoke with the congressman. I never said I did. He added, you got to find out what his staff who might have talked to my staff. That's all I have to say. End of story, right? End of story. A little bit more here. Is there more? So you're saying that your chief of staff normally acts in that way, that they would not make you aware? We believe he tried to talk to Mike Kelly's office. Then Windsor tells Johnson he was playing a role in the overturning of our election. Johnson responded, I played a 2-minute role before saying, I did not. Please go away. Come back, more devils. Attorney General Josh Call, my fine guest next.
Say, man, you got a joint?
You know, I was not involved in this at all.
It'd be a lot cooler if you did.
Why don't you just leave me alone?
I wish you weren't a liar.
Yeah, that's when I decided to take the law into my own hands.
Charged, never convicted. The Devil's Advocates.
Advocates Radio Show, the Monday edition. We're joined right now live via Zoom, I believe, by Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call. Just saw him this weekend at the Democratic Party convention. Josh, welcome back to the Devil's Advocate, sir.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Josh, appreciate you joining us. Obviously, sort of shocking is probably not the right descriptor. We had seen the leaked draft. We suspected that Roe v. Wade was being overturned, or at least, you know, it was out there, but now it's reality. And Josh, this dropped on Friday, and effectively Wisconsin has reverted to the law in the books, which is an 1849 law. Josh, my understanding is abortion is illegal in the state of Wisconsin as we speak.
Well, it's certainly not being provided right now. The Planned Parenthood clinics in Wisconsin have shut down operations. And what the state of the law is, honestly, is unclear. We have this 1800s ban on the books that was never repealed. At the same time, though, there were a series of laws passed much later that regulate legal abortion. And so there are sort of two sets of statutes on the books that are in conflict with each other right now. We're also in this very unusual position where we've had a statute that was unenforceable for almost 50 years, and whether that springs back to life is not something we've got a lot of legal press on, because the situation where a right that had been granted to Americans is all of a sudden taken away is not something that we're used to seeing. And so I think there's going to be a lot of litigation ahead of us, and where that all ends up remains to be seen.
Josh, over the course of the weekend, there was sort of an abortive care rally prior to the Democratic Party convention. I know you spoke there. The governor spoke there. Josh, what did you tell the people from the platform at the La Crosse Center? What was your take as the attorney general? What sort of relief can you offer under the current circumstance?
Well, first I said that, you know, it was a dark day for the country. Roe v. Wade transformed the country for the better. It made women in America freer and more equal, and it made it safer to have a kid, to carry a pregnancy. And the progress that was made through Roe v. Wade was lost with the Supreme Court's decision. We went back in time 49 years, and the gains that were made have now been reversed. So, you know, on Friday, that's when that decision came down, and that rally was held on Saturday, and I said, today is the day we begin to fight back. You know, there are a lot of things we can be doing right now to restore access to safe and legal abortion in Wisconsin. We need to advocate for legislation and continue to call on our legislators to take action. They refused to do that less than a week ago on the day of the special session. But now that decision has come down, and they've got a responsibility to their constituents to clarify what the law is and to protect reproductive freedom. I suspect there's going to be litigation. And in the meantime, Governor Evers and I have been very clear that we're going to take whatever steps we can to mitigate the impact of this. I've been clear that I'm not going to use any Wisconsin DOJ resources to investigate or prosecute anybody for violations of the 19th century abortion ban. But we need to keep calling on our leaders and especially the legislators to take action. And until reproductive freedom in Wisconsin is fully restored, I'm going to keep fighting to restore that freedom.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. We are zooming in with Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call. He joins us. Josh, the governor offered clemency to abortion providers that might be criminally charged or prosecuted under the law. First and foremost, I realize you are the attorney general, but could a local level DA, if the state law is in place and in force, could a local DA charge these abortive providers? And do you think it would ever get to the point where the governor would have to extend clemency? Can they go around the AG's office? Is this a state level charge, or could this be charged on the local level and require clemency if Evers wanted to let these people off, quote unquote?
Yeah, unfortunately, the answer is yes. A DA could bring charges. The incidents that led up to the charges have to happen in the DA's county. But DAs around Wisconsin will have to make that decision. Now, I know that DA Chisholm joined a statement from dozens of prosecutors around the country saying that they would not be using their authority to enforce any abortion bans. And I know that DA Ozan in Dane County has likewise said that he's not going to enforce that ban. But, you know, we're going to need to ask prosecutors and police chiefs and sheriffs around the state whether they would use their resources to enforce this 19th century ban. Because, you know, ultimately each DA, each sheriff, and each police chief has to make a decision about how to use their resources. It's my view that everybody in law enforcement in the state has better things to do with their resources, no matter what you think of abortion. You've got better things to do with your resources than to be investigating and prosecuting people under this 19th century ban. I'd much rather see resources continue to go where they should, which is to fight real crime in Wisconsin. But ultimately, we've got to ask our DAs and our sheriffs and our police chiefs where they stand.
Attorney General Call, obviously, both you and Tony Evers are on the ballot. And I think it's not too much of a stretch to say that Roe v. Wade is on the ballot. But we realize that the legislative majorities, the Republican majorities, are fairly gerrymandered in here in the state of Wisconsin. And if our only defense is a Democratic governor and a Democratic attorney general, if that's our only thing keeping Wisconsin reproductive rights from falling off the brink, well, that's a very fragile state to be in. Josh, if there's going to be a remedy, does the remedy practically, from the state of Wisconsin's point of view, have to be a congressional remedy signed into law, presumably by a Joe Biden?
No, I don't think so. You know, now that Roe is overturned, there's no question that the easiest way to remedy the situation is by having Congress pass legislation that would codify Roe versus Wade. Now, so far, the Senate has not been able to do that. And, you know, if we elect a couple more Democratic senators and keep the House, I think that would become a real possibility. And I think that absolutely should be a goal in the 2022 elections. But we're not without recourse at the state level either. You know, we do have a gerrymandered legislature, and that's going to make it a lot harder to send a clear message. But there will be competitive races, and every race where we can elect a pro-choice Democratic candidate is going to be a step in the right direction. We'll send a message. It is vital that we keep Democrats in our statewide offices. We need to have the veto. We need to have an AG who's going to stand up for the rule of law and for the rights and freedoms of Wisconsinites. And it's possible that we will have, that the state courts may play a critical role in what comes before us as well. You know, there's going to be a big state Supreme Court election on the ballot next spring. So voters have some opportunities to send a message here. But the 2022 election, I think, will be remembered for a generation as the election that followed the decision overturning Roe versus Wade. This is the election that will send a message that will be remembered for years to come about how voters feel about that decision. And I think that if we send a very clear message that this is not something that Wisconsinites support, we are much more likely to see reproductive freedom restored in Wisconsin than if we don't have that kind of message sent.
Folks, you're listening to The Devil's Advocate. Got a fine guest live via Zoom. Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call. Josh, I'm still worried about the 2020 election, and I think there are a lot of Republicans in the state of Wisconsin still trying to relitigate the 2020 election. Sir, during the January 6th committee hearing testimony last week, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson was announced as sort of a willing co-conspirator, at least in the delivery of the false Wisconsin electors, or it was his goal, or, you know, maybe he's just a willing dupe, but he was willing to deliver the false electors to the vice president of the United States. And of course, that was part of a greater coup effort, at least in my opinion, Josh. The fraudulent Trump electors here in the state of Wisconsin. We've bantered, we've talked about this ad nauseum, sir. What role does the attorney general have to investigate that possible crime? And do you perceive it as a crime under state law, or is there nothing currently on the books under state law that prevents someone from making a fraudulent representation of this sort?
Well, first, we investigate and cases, and we use our prosecutorial authority where appropriate based on the facts before us, based on the law. And that is true in any case, no matter what the context is. You know, we don't generally comment on details regarding either ongoing investigations or potential investigations. And so I'm not going to speak with any detail here regarding the electors issue or the legal implications of it with respect to our office. What I can say, though, is that it is vital, and I'm really glad to see the progress that's being made, that there be a federal investigation into all different aspects of this effort to overturn the results of a free and fair election. I mean, we very clearly had an attempted coup after the 2020 election, and the people who broke the law and contributed to that effort need to be held accountable. I know that the Deputy U.S. Attorney General has said that there is a federal investigation going on into the electors in different states around the country. There's been reporting about people being interviewed and being subpoenaed by the U.S. Department of Justice, and I think that absolutely should be happening. There's also obviously a lot happening with the January 6th Commission. And, you know, investigations that involve federal entities need to be done thoughtfully and in coordination between state and federal investigators and in a way that best serves the interests of the investigation. So again, I can't speak to specifics about Wisconsin DOJ's role, but I do think it's not only appropriate, but really vital that that the investigation that's ongoing at the federal level continue.
Josh, your colleague as Attorney General in the state of Michigan, Dana Nessel, who's been on the show a few times, she made the statement that she felt like it was a violation of Michigan law, but she also pointed out the similarities between these false elector schemes certainly made it seem like it was a multi-jurisdictional sort of investigation and possibly a prosecution. Josh, does the multi-jurisdictional nature, does that handcuff your office? Does that put you in a weird position, if you can speak to it, sir?
Yeah, well, I won't speak to the specifics of, again, the electors case, but I can speak generally to the point about cases that go across jurisdictions. You know, I spent part of my career as a federal prosecutor in Baltimore, and I worked on cases where federal government was involved in investigations, but also state entities may be involved as well. And I can say a couple of things. One is when you have activity that crosses multiple states, you know, there may be conduct in many different states that law enforcement would be interested in. The ideal way to investigate those cases is at least to have them led by the federal government, because the federal government has authority to conduct those investigations. They don't have to worry about which state particular action happened in. Secondly, it's important when there's an investigation conducted for there to be one investigation and not parallel investigations going on separately and at the same time. If you have two separate investigations into the same conduct, that can lead to people stepping on each other's toes. You might have somebody who's, for example, a cooperating witness in one investigation, who, you know, the other investigation may not be aware of that, and that could complicate their strategy. Having one unified investigation is important. Having that kind of investigation doesn't preclude both federal and state charges from being brought in a case. And so, for example, you know, I worked on drug conspiracy cases where some of the defendants would be charged federally, And then separately, some defendants would be charged in state court. So, you know, those are the principles that are important in any kind of context where you've got any sort of potential multi-state criminal investigation. And so, so the fact that something's going on in multiple states doesn't preclude states from being involved, but it also doesn't, you know, those kinds of things have to happen in coordination.
Hey, Josh, we're about out of time here. I know you're running to be the Attorney General of the great state of Wisconsin. Again, if people want to support your campaign, how can they get involved, sir?
Please go to joshcall.org. We are going to have our freedoms on the ballot this year, including our reproductive freedom. And it's critical that we all get out and exercise our voices at the polls.
Thank you so much, Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call. Come back. More Devil's Advocates.
Good luck. We're all counting on you.
Come on, man. And with the local DBC News, LLQJ with a triumphant
comeback. The Devil's Advocates, making radio great again.
Don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years. I'm rocking my pants.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Appreciate our most recent guest. Next time we're making him call in, though, man. Attorney General Josh Call in need of a better Zoom mic, but we'll work it out. We'll work it out. I hope you were able to hear all the fine content provided. That's the most important thing. And Fancy Brian, I've just booked another fine guest for this fine program. Still working even during the commercial breaks. John Nichols from the Cap Times and the Nation going to join us top of the 5 o'clock hour. So that's like 10 minutes away. So that's good news. And our little buddy Dominic, another unexcused absence. No, he had it planned, but come on, man. We're going into like a 3-4 day weekend. You had to take off the Monday before. Must be what? An extended summer fest. Is big band playing tonight? What's going on?
I can't tell you, but I guarantee you it's Summerfest related. Whatever it is, it probably is. He's the Summerfest king now.
He is partying wherever he's at. He's having a good time, I suspect.
Even when interviewing candidates or important people.
You know, I had a hell of a good time this weekend at the Democratic Party convention, but I think it was the first one I've ever been to unchaperoned by Dominic. You know, sometimes he kind of takes the edginess off Crudy. Apparently, I've got a reputation for being somewhat blunt, Fancy Brian.
Well, it's a well...
It precedes me.
Well, you've definitely earned it, for sure, and it's not a bad thing.
Well, I'll tell that to a few of the candidates. They seem a little leery of my bluntness occasionally.
Well, when you're political, that's kind of how it is.
Do you see what happened to Rudy Giuliani over the weekend?
I heard snippets.
Snippets, yes, that's one way of putting it. Rudy Giuliani was kind of welcomed, you might say, you know, someone... wanted to touch him and let him know they were a big fan of, you know, Rudy Giuliani. Who's not a big fan of Rudy? Oh, where'd I hide this one? I can't believe I can't find my Rudy stuff. Well, here's one. Now, a man apparently walked up to Rudy, who was on the campaign trail for his kid, Andrew, the ne'er-do-well son of Rudy Giuliani. And I mean, you know, you can hardly blame the kid. The crazy hardly falls far from the tree. But anyways, the old man was out campaigning for the kid. That's my understanding. And I don't know if they were, what, at a grocery store or something of the nature. A ShopRite grocery store. I think ShopRite's a grocery store. But apparently one of the workers who was arrested after he allegedly hit Rudy Giuliani in the back has had his charges downgraded, according to the New York Post. Now, it seemed a little much that this guy got charged. Rudy's, you know, it hit me like a ton of bricks. And effectively, and I've seen the video, let me describe it. Daniel Gill, 39, left a Staten Island criminal court after his arraignment Monday. Gill, who has no previous criminal history, had his charges downgraded to third-degree assault, third-degree menacing, and second-degree harassment after the over the caught-on-camera attack inside the supermarket. He was initially charged with second-degree assault involving a person over the age of 65. What, you can't smack Rudy on the back because he's old? He's
Stop
old.
Touching me all the time.
He was allowed to be released on his own recognizance. Gill's defense attorney, Susan Plattis, said It appeared to be a tap on the back and not a slap. This is not a criminal contact. It's very unlikely that the touch could have caused any injury. So to call this assaulted the third or even menacing is a stretch. Now, Giuliani refused medical attention at the scene, but complained of swelling and much more pain due to the incident. Security footage of the incident, they're calling it an incident, the brouhaha at the ShopRite, the incident, shows Gill coming up behind Rudy Giuliani and slap him on the back before apparently exchanging words with him. While the slap doesn't seem to reflect Giuliani's account, you know, Giuliani said it was a big deal. The video says no big deal. He can be seen slightly lurching forward after Gill makes contact with his back. Giuliani has called for Gill to be locked up. Lock him up. Lock him up. Say he could have easily been killed if he'd have been knocked to the floor. If only it were that easy to kill Giuliani. This guy should be in prison, Giuliani said during a virtual press conference ahead of Gill's court appearance. Then later slammed the downgrading of the charges, saying, finally, I thought we had a DA in New York and Staten Island who was a real DA in favor of protecting victims and not letting the criminals go free. Giuliani claims the man said the former New York City mayor kills women due to a stance on abortion. What else did he say?
I've fallen and I can't get up.
I know. I wish I had the specific quote. Like, you're a scumbag, and like slapped him on the back. Like, how you doing, scumbag? You kill women, or something of that sort. You know, and he gave, and I've also been guilty of this form of, you know, menacing or third degree assault. I've confessed on air, although statute of limitations far exceeded. But I smacked the heck out of the back of a kid's head for sitting at my desk, put my feet up on it. And, you know, I gave him the old, I actually lined it up because I had minor surgery on my right hand. So I couldn't use my good whacking hand. I had to line up the left hand and, you know, it was deliberate. I had to make sure I had a good approach angle. You know, if you're going to backhand off-handed, you got to line it up. So I just smacked this kid on the head, left like a red handprint on the back of his neck. And meant to do it. Absolutely. Guilty. But anywho, the kid had it coming. Kind of like Rudy Giuliani had it coming. And you know, I'm sure he'd like to raise hell. But, you know, at the end of the day, hearty smack on the back or the back of the head, you know, technically it might cross a line. You probably shouldn't do that with regularity. But if someone's really got it coming, now give them the old sugar smack. It's good enough for my breakfast cereal. It's good enough for that kid who had his feet on my desk, and it was good enough for Rudy Giuliani.
Speaking as a former bouncer, I have many things to say.
Would you throw a guy? I mean, if you saw one guy walk up and smack another guy in the back, you know, and say, "Hey, scumbag," would that get you thrown out?
Yeah, I'd get him thrown out unless the other person was a friend of theirs, and they were like, "We're just being idiots." I'm like, "Please stop being idiots, because we can't assume either way." And then if you do it again, we'll throw you both out.
Yeah, but criminal arrest?
No,
a guy charged?
No. And if the cop came to me to give a report, I'd say, "Yeah, dude, smacked him upside the head. It's fine."
Dude, like your second day on the job, you were in a acting role where you played a mob bouncer on TV, and you threw the mobster out in the alley. And then you spit on him.
Yeah.
Would you have thrown the guy out and spit on the Giuliani smacker perpetrator?
I haven't spit on anyone in real life, but I've definitely thrown a couple people in dumpsters.
In real life?
They have
just
coming.
A friend. You guys are just kidding. Just being an idiot. It's
just friendly.
Wasn't Giuliani, was it? Come back. We got a fine guest joining us for the Happier Happy Hour. He is John Nichols from The Nation. Your phone calls always welcome here at 844-967-2789.
You take your hand, you stick it in your ass like this.
Sometimes when we touch.
If you touch me again, I'll kill you.
Let's have trial by combat.
I've fallen and I can't get up.